and the Reverend David Searle gave the following Bible reading and study during the prayer fellowship on Wednesday the 22nd of May 1991.
Now if we can just open our Bibles for a moment or two before we come to pray, and we're in Mark chapter 2, the last paragraph of the chapter, verse 23. Mark chapter 2, and the title that's given here in the NIV is Lord of the Sabbath. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the cornfields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some ears of corn. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.'" My own mother's upbringing was not in a Christian home, anything but. She didn't get any Christian teaching at all, but through her own reading of God's Word and study of God's Word, she became convinced that it was right and godly to remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. And so I was brought up in a home which was very Sabbatarian. No work at all was done on Sunday. All the food for Sunday was prepared on Saturday. The potatoes were peeled, the vegetables prepared, and all that had to be done when we came home from church was just the gas to be lit underneath the pans that were all sitting there. It was always pie for pudding on Sunday, and we had cold pie, usually the custard was cold as well. It was all made, but we didn't mind that in the slightest. All the clothing was set out the night before. You weren't allowed to polish your shoes on Sunday. That had to be done the day before. Now, you might think that a day like that, where you weren't allowed to do anything at all, just the necessities, would be terrible for children, but in fact, we loved it. My mother was always chasing us up, tidy your room, do this, do that, do your homework. If she saw you sitting down, she'd try and think of something that she could get you doing. My wife says that as a result I can't sit down because I've always been got on the go, but Sunday was different. It was a total rest. And so we used to waken up and say, "Great, it's Sunday." And we could just be absolutely quiet and still. In the afternoon, if it was a good day, we went out for a walk, always in twos, never less than twos. We weren't allowed to go on our own. If it was raining, she had a cupboard full of Sunday toys. And they were all around the Bible, all to do with texts and card games and so on that she'd accumulated. But they were all designed to make Sunday a different day, a special day, a holy day. Now, where did Mother get all that from? Was it just out of her own head? No, she got it from the very first chapter in the Bible. And on the seventh day, God rested from all that he had done. And so God set on one side the seventh day and called it the Sabbath and sanctified it. And the original gift of Sunday is in fact a creation gift, a creation ordinance. And we read about it in the last verse of chapter 1 of Genesis and the first verse of chapter 2 of Genesis. Now, behind that gift is the understanding of our Maker, our God, our Creator, that all of us need to cease, to stop, to be still. I said a moment ago, Sabbath means ceasing, stopping. And I say again that we enjoyed the Sabbath as children. It was a wonderful day. I suppose Mother was rather strict. Boys at the tea table or the dinner table would be talking about the latest model of car, you know. Have you seen the new 1948 Austin 10? Its speedometer goes up to 65, you know. And she'd pick up that and say, no talk about cars on Sunday. You've got 6 days in the week when you can talk about cars. Keep your conversation as such as becomes the Lord's Day and edifies. We 10-year-olds, you know, we had to sort of steer clear. And if we went around the house whistling on Sunday, no whistling on Sunday. She was really very strict about it. But we still loved the Lord's Day. It was a gift. And it was something that was enjoyed. And that's how God intends it. To be something that is a precious gift that we receive as a gift and that we enjoy and that we appreciate. Now the problem is that as with many gifts, a gift can be abused. And the gift of the Sabbath was abused. It's abused today and it was abused in Jesus' day. And there's more than one way of abusing it. And the way in which it was abused in Jesus' day was by legalism. The rabbis had drawn up more than 400 rules about what you could do and what you couldn't do on the Sabbath. Exactly how far you could walk. Even what to do if a wall fell on top of someone. One rule said if the wall has fallen on top of someone, you can remove enough stones until you find out how badly he's injured. And if you assess that he's not badly injured, then you've got to leave him until the Sabbath's finished, and then you can remove the rest. But if he's groaning and like to die, then you can remove enough to get him out. It was as daft as that. It really was. 400 rules that you had to know and remember in order to keep the Sabbath. And one of them was that you couldn't do any work, and all the kinds of work that it was possible to do were categorized, and one of them was pulling the corn, rubbing it between your hands, blowing out the chaff, and then eating it. That was threshing. So you couldn't do that. Now, it was quite legal to pull the corn. If you know the Book of Leviticus, you'll know that when you were reaping, you hadn't to pick up the corn that fell. You had to leave it for other people. If someone was walking through your vineyard, they could help themselves to grapes and eat them as long as they didn't take any away with them. And if you saw oranges, you could take one as long as you didn't take any away with you, as long as you ate it on the spot. That was all part of the Mosaic law. In my readings in Leviticus this week, I was reading about the Year of Jubilee. You should know all about the Year of Jubilee, the most marvelous social system. Tremendous. Just cuts right through the left in politics and the right in politics. Divine genius. However, we'll get back to that on another occasion. Read the Year of Jubilee when you get home. Leviticus 25, I think it is. It's just tremendous. However, these were some of the laws. So what Jesus and his disciples were doing as they walked along the edge of the cornfield was quite legal. They could do that. And they were eating the corn because they were hungry. And they had no income. They lived by faith, and so they were quite entitled to take a few handfuls of corn, and no farmer would miss that. And they were accused of breaking the Sabbath. And so Jesus gives the example of David. You remember David was running away from Saul. Saul had thrown his spear at him and he was fleeing and he was faint with hunger and the few men with him. And he came to the tabernacle at Shiloh and Abiathar the priest gave him the holy bread which was in the holy place, which was only lawful for the priest to eat. And Jesus said that was all right. Now, in case you think my theology is ropey, I'm going to quote Calvin on this. And Calvin says, if godliness is unharmed, the ceremonies of the law are not violated. Or to put it the other way round, the ceremonies of the law, the strict regulations of the law, are not violated if godliness is unharmed. And then he concludes, necessity can override the Levitical ceremony. And that's really what Jesus is saying. He's saying that necessity is stronger than the letter of the law. And he puts it in another way elsewhere when he says, "You're hypocrites, if your donkey falls into a hole on the Sabbath, you'll go and pull your donkey out, won't you? Because your donkey means pounds, shillings and pence to you, it means money to you, it's your livelihood. Of course you'll go and pull it out, you won't let it suffer in the hole." Necessity overrides the letter of the law. So that's one way in which the Sabbath, the gift of the Sabbath, can be abused by legalism. Now, I don't think you'll find much legalism in Northern Ireland, but I'll tell you where you will find it. You'll find it in the Highlands and the Islands. I'd just been here a year when someone in church one Sunday gave me a wee cutting that had taken out of the newsletter. And it was about a couple of Ulster folk who'd been up to the island of Skye for a holiday, a summer holiday. And they weren't Christian people at all, and they'd wanted to go fishing on Sunday. And they'd said to their landlady, "Could we hire a boat today?" And she said, "No, it's the Sabbath." And they'd said, "But surely someone would hire a boat on Sunday." And she said, "It is the Sabbath." Well, there you see, you have total Sunday observance. So they said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, but it is the Sabbath." And they said, "But Jesus went in a boat on Sunday, on the Sabbath." And she said, "And I think the less of him for it." Of course, there's no record that he did go in a boat on the Sabbath. But that was her answer. A woman will always have an answer for something. And you will get a lot of legalism up there, one has to admit it, but I have to say that the Sundays I have spent up in the north of Scotland on the islands are just wonderful. They are absolute bliss. They really are. Nothing happens at all except the absolute necessities of life, but there is legalism. But there is another abuse of God's gift of the Lord's Day, and it's at the opposite end of the scale. And I'll tell you who is particularly guilty of it, and it's ministers. Because, you see, God has ordained that we should take one day of ceasing, and there are quite a number of ministers who don't take a day off, and they boast about it. And they say, "I'm too busy to take a day off." What about Genesis 1 and 2? What about the Ten Commandments? And what about God's gift? Do you realize that it's a congregation's responsibility to make sure that all its full-time workers have a day of ceasing? It's not clever or noble or industrious or brave or pious not to have that day of ceasing. And we all need a day of ceasing. Now, the gift, I'm afraid, of the Lord's Day is being rejected today. I think we're all aware of that. And because of that, doctors are being pestered for tranquilizers and sedatives. And I'm sure that by far the best tranquilizer would be to take one day in seven for a complete rest. Far, far better than going on to some prescription artificially to calm your nerves. Some people go out frenetically working at their leisure. The leisure business has become big business now, and they really go at their leisure, you know, and come back exhausted from their leisure. And then there's the whole problem of stress, which is a modern problem. Now, cardiologist has just retired from Charing Cross Hospital, a Dr. Peter Nixon, and he has been saying for 25 years that cholesterol and butter and all these various things are of secondary importance, that there's something that's far more important than that. And my wife cut out from The Independent a leading article, and I'm going to quote a couple of sentences by this Dr. Peter Nixon. "The heart..." The ticker, he means. "The heart stands for order, stability, and maintenance of bodily integrity. I don't see a heart attack as a random or arbitrary incident. Heart attacks happen when the system has become overloaded and the individual is no longer in control of circumstances. Stress levels get even higher in people hurtling towards final collapse. Attempting to modify a diet or to start jogging can cause extra strain, which actually may precipitate a heart attack. The first thing is to get rested. And then he goes on to say how when his heart patients come to him, either having had a heart attack or threatening a heart attack, he says to them, the first thing to do is to get your life sorted out. Your whole life sorted out. And yet God has given to us the gift of one day in seven. And we know better. We reject that gift. And so we become stressed and stressed. And we head on towards a lack of bodily integrity, as that Dr. Peter Nixon puts it. Now, the final point is a gift enjoyed. Well, Jesus says here, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words, it's a gift. The Sabbath is a gift. It was made for us. It's God's gift to us. Now, some people, you go into their homes and you see a lovely china cabinet there, and in it is the most beautiful tea set. And if you admire it, they say, oh yes, my granny got that as a wedding present. And it's never been used since. It's a gift and it's there on display. Well, I suppose that's all right if you like bonny things to decorate your room. But really a gift is meant to be used, isn't it? And a tea set's meant to be used. And the Lord's gift of the Sabbath is meant to be used. It's like these practical gifts of towels or an electric kettle or an iron. Something that you're going to use every day in your married life. And so the Lord is giving to us a life pattern. He's saying, this is the best life pattern. This is I'm the maker. You need to follow the maker's instructions. And the maker's instructions are that you need a day of ceasing once a week. As we saw when we were looking at Genesis 1 and 2, Christianity gave the week to the world. You didn't have a week in the first century and all the various cultures. They divided up the 365 days quite differently. But people looked at Christians who were beginning to introduce into their living one day's rest in seven. And they said, what an excellent idea. That works. And so virtually the whole world has taken on the week now. They saw its excellence and they copied it. They adopted it. And yet, the situation we're in today is we're struggling to preserve it. And we have the Lord's Day Observance Society fighting a rearguard action, and we have the campaign that our Kirk Session has recently decided to back, Keep Sunday Special. Well, let us enjoy it. And let us cherish it. For you see, Sunday is a holy day when, to quote Calvin again, we cease from our work to contemplate the work of God. And that really is at the heart of our praying, that the Lord's Day will be special by His presence.